Welcome to Saturday Simulcast, and our guest today will be Mike Carman. Mike, I know wears so many hats that he's not even wearing a hat right now. He just is. But Greater Lafayette Sports Report. If you haven't watched, haven't checked into that, you should, because it is Mike's insight is excellent on any sports topic, women's basketball right now. That's a big part of what he is writing about, to say the least, and very interesting stuff. We'll talk some women's basketball, and then of course we'll talk obviously some men's basketball, and maybe a little bit on the great, wonderful world of coaching carousels and transfer portals. But we don't have a 2-hour show, so we can't, don't have a lot to can't get into all that today. But I want to thank our sponsor, the Union Club Hotel. And the Boiler Up Bar, 811 Bistro, all the things that you can do at the Union, as Brian Newbert says on his rap videos. If they had hotels and unions at this weekend in Iowa City, he'd be in one. But we appreciate all that they do for us. All right, Mike, let's start with men's basketball. Obviously, Purdue, anytime, and you've seen many of them over the years, but the Boilermakers, an extremely impressive performance for 35 out of the 40 minutes, probably against Indiana, and the biggest win in Bloomington since 1934 in terms of point spread. But just your impressions of what you saw on Tuesday night, and where this basketball team is.
Did you cover the game in 1934?
I did not. I was gonna. I stopped short of saying. I did say that in some other interview I had, that I was not at that game. It was 47-13, that I know, but I think IU missed an extra point or something like that in that game. I'm not sure.
This team is still in good shape. You don't want to go too far out on a limb, but I still think this is the best team in the Big Ten.
Yeah.
I still think they win the Big Ten by multiple games. That could be two. That could be three. I still
But
think
more than one. Okay.
I still think that, and they still have probably a loss or two ahead of them, just based on circumstances and other things. But as you know, and everybody knows, this is a better team than it was last year.
Yeah.
Additions and the improvement and the maturity and getting older on the perimeter. But what that means in March, we don't know yet, and that's for a different day. But you like the way they took care of business. You like the way that they leaned on their strengths, which is Zach and some other guys there, and getting Fletcher Loyer involved is always a positive for them. The more balance they have, the more people you have to guard on the floor, the tougher they are to defend. And, Indiana has some shortcomings that just does not, they don't match up well with Purdue, and a lot of teams face that too. But impressive win against your rival always makes you feel better. But, in the Big Ten, you got to do it again, and you got to go on the road again and do it at Iowa, a team that's going to put up some points. So, Purdue's offense has got to be at a high level. And to me, this is a very simple approach for this team. If they take care of the ball, they're going to score and they're probably going to win. I mean, that's kind of what I think this team is and what this season is going to come down to.
You saw in the game in December against Iowa, of course, Purdue was up 28, I think maybe even more than that in that game, and it really wasn't competitive. Iowa has matchup problems with Purdue too. Now, Iowa's got some different look, like you said, they can score it, and they are playing better. They at least got your attention by their win at Minnesota and beating Nebraska at home like a drum after Purdue couldn't beat Nebraska. There are some things that lead you to believe that this can be a competitive game, but again, it just seems like if Purdue can stay on task, it should be fine. Later today is when the Boilermakers take on the Hawkeyes.
Well, I mean, it's going to be tough. It's a road game against a
Yeah.
team already beat pretty handily. They're going to start, we're getting to the point of the year now where Purdue's going to face teams that are desperate to
They need
improve their,
wins.
yeah, improve their Big Ten standings, but also improve their NCAA standings. And, Purdue is a, they're a walking quad one for everybody that plays. And so that's a big time victory for teams. So they've got to, you still got to play with the edge, and you can't take anything for granted. You have to stay focused. And again, it comes down to turnovers, and they've had most of their turnover problems have come away from Mackey Arena. You know, when you look at Northwestern and you look at, Nebraska. So whatever the formula is there to keep those turnovers at a reasonable number, they're going to be in great shape, and they're not going to shoot the ball as well as they do every night. But as we've seen, they crash the offensive boards really well. They get their second opportunities, and that seems to get them from point A to point B most nights.
Now, you and I are both old enough to remember the last time that there were back-to-back national players of the year. Ralph Sampson, I think you were 7 years old at the time, and I was eight. But this, Zach Edey, and you talked about it, wrote about it, and I know Brian did as well, just that whole edge. He seemed to be kind of playing like he was honked off. It's simple to say that. Then he plays extremely well against Penn State and Purdue. Changed, I don't know if it changed its focus, but went back to getting him the ball. Again, matchups have a lot to do with that. We saw that against Indiana as well, where Zach Edey is playing like the National Player of the Year. Not that he was all that far off before, but talk about that development and just his role as Purdue kind of works its way through the season. When you hope to get to a Final Four, it pays to have a guy like Zach Edey that you can ride all the way there.
I think I look at things it's pretty simple for me.
There you go.
I mean, if you look at the last two games, especially in the first half, while he may have picked up a foul, I can't remember exactly.
Just one against Indiana, right?
I can't remember if he picked up a foul against Penn State early, but he's been on the floor to start the game longer than I can recall. Now, I'd have to go through the play-by-play sheet and all that. But I even mentioned something to Brian, I think Penn State. You know, he was still on the floor halfway through the first half and maybe up to that, close to that 8-minute media timeout, where before,
in other games
throughout his career, he's usually out by the 12-minute media timeout. So he's been on the floor longer, and I think maybe that's allowed him to get more in a flow, in a rhythm. And the matchups come into play with that. The lack of fouls with him plays a role in that. I mean, obviously, if he picks up two fouls, he's going to sit, as long as, Purdue can afford him to sit.
Yeah.
Like,
mm-hmm.
you remember the Illinois game where he got two fouls, sat the last 8 minutes or so, and Purdue extended the lead. You know, if it had gotten close, I don't know what Painter would have done at the end of the first half. But if you can afford to sit him with two fouls, you do it. But I do think it's just him being on the floor, getting into the rhythm, maybe a more concentrated effort to take advantage of those matchups that they've worked on. I do know before the Penn State game, they wanted to get him the ball a lot more. They wanted to get him more touches early in the possessions to establish the inside game and force Penn State to make some decisions that, they couldn't really make. I mean, they're not comfortable either way, either doubling him or leaving Purdue shooters open. So I just think he's gotten a good rhythm here recently, and I would expect them to try to do the same thing on Saturday against Iowa, which, again, has matchup problems. And if you can get him rolling early, then he's a hard guy to stop after that.
Yeah, no question. And one thing, too, that Iowa has not been known for a great deal of defensive skill and ability. Again, they can score. Purdue just got to, I mean, I don't know if it's being patient, but, we talked about it, just make shots. Boy, Purdue looks like a good basketball team, and Fletcher Loyer makes shots, or Lance Jones makes shots. I mean, I'm using my Mike Carmen philosophy. It's not that difficult. Purdue, you put the ball in the basket, you look good. And those guys have been doing a pretty good job of that. What's that?
And you take care of the ball.
Yeah, and you take care of the ball, and even and certainly, I think under 10 turnovers against Indiana was a step in the right direction in a hostile environment, and that didn't seem to bother Purdue even when Indiana made and Trey Galloway went off in the second half. It did bother them. I mean, they got it down to 9 points, but they weathered the storm. That to me was one of the another thing, a clear sign of a team that. Has another gear, and it seems that's the case with Purdue, that they might, you talked about that, the maturity, that extra year. They're not last year's team, they're this year's team. They've got some players, and Jones and Heidi especially, that really make a difference. Is that a fair, simple compilation of what we're watching at this point?
Yeah, I mean, they had to go get more quickness than they did with Lance Jones, and he can be a one-man press break. At times, and he's proven to be a really good 3-point shooter. You can't leave him open on the perimeter. So yeah, that's simple. And they've got more depth to go with. Cam Heidi's been pretty solid coming off the bench, giving them, whether it's a 3-pointer, some defensive stops. So Matt, as everyone knows, Matt has a lot of options he can go to depending on what's happening. I think one area that may doesn't get enough attention or hasn't gotten as much attention is just the production they've gotten from their four men, Mason Gillis and Trey Kaufman-Renz. Trey Kaufman-Renz had nights where, he had 23 in one night, and kind of carried some load there. Mason has always been solid, in what he does, and he's coming off the bench. He brings physicality. He brings 3-point shooting. He brings toughness. He rebounds well. I found a stat the other day that he has as many offensive rebounds that he does as he has 3-pointers. I don't know
impressive.
What that. I don't know what that. For a 4-man, that seems like a pretty good combination to have. So I think what they're getting out of the 4 position has really maybe pushed them forward another level. To compliment Zach in what he does. So things are trending in the right direction for them, but the Big Ten's filled with landmines, and it happens this way. This time it happens sometimes like this, where everybody has an off shooting night for some reason. And, you find yourself in a hostile environment and can't get out of it for whatever reason. But right now they're trending in pretty good direction.
Yes, this Saturday simulcast is evergreen till about 4:30 p.m. Eastern. Then everything we've said may or may not be true based on the results in Iowa City. And certainly that, I think, is true. I think I think there's a general feeling that Purdue's in good shape and trending in the right direction. But I agree with you, Mike. I don't see them going undefeated here the rest of the Big Ten season. There's somebody that's going to get them on the road and cause Purdue to recalibrate a little bit. And that may not be a bad thing for Matt Painter's team, just because just making those tweaks and doing some things a little bit differently and better, still got to get better from January the 20th to the third week in March. You want to be better. So, all right, now we want to talk also women's basketball. Nobody knows women's basketball, Purdue women's basketball, more than Mike Carman. Greater Lafayette Sports Report is a, if you haven't had a chance to subscribe to that, operators are standing by, but a great Mike does a great job with that and his analysis of a team that, on Thursday night just kind of seemed to me to be more, and I don't watch them near as much as you do, but seemed to be a little bit of more of the same, at least on the road against Penn State in a double-digit loss in a game that the Boilermakers could not penetrate that single digits. It didn't seem much in the second half. Talk about where Katie Gerald's team is. They're 9-8 right now. Their net is near 80. They have opportunities. We will talk about Indiana on Sunday. There's a lot of teams they can beat if they could get somehow really do an about face to get back to the tournament. But it seems to me that is becoming a little far-fetched at this point for Katie Gerald's third team.
Yeah, I mean, they put themselves in a hole right now, and it's going to take a lot to get out of it. And with who they have to play and where they're positioned in the Big Ten, they're going to have to go on a pretty substantial winning streak to climb out of that. I mean, the way things are jumbled in the Big Ten, you're not that far from being where they're at now to climbing a new position, but it's more than that because the record's not what it should be or what they had hoped it would be, being at 9-8. They lost too many games in the non-conference. So, you know, they have a lot of work to even, I think, get back to thinking about the NCAA tournament. I mean, their focus right now is just trying to find a win, break the three-game losing streak, and figure out a way to take care of the basketball early in the game. They've had high turnovers in the first quarter, in the first half. It's put them in big holes the last two games at Maryland and at Penn State. And there, a lot of them are unforced turnovers, are just plays that you would expect being made at this level. You'd be curious going back and the combination of forced and unforced turnovers. They had some live ball turnovers last night that hurt them. You know, once they got down double digits, they never could get it back. And but they're in a tough spot right now, trying to get a win. I mean, you have a group of veterans that have brought you to this point, but you also have a good nucleus of freshmen that's getting more and more playing time, and probably should get more and more playing time as we move forward here, because you need to have a little bit of an eye to the future, an eye to next season. No one in the program is going to say that, but you know that has to be part of the thinking as they navigate here the next couple weeks to get to the end of January to see what exactly February can mean for them.
Yeah, you know, you look at the end of the game where on Thursday night against Penn State, you had five freshmen on the floor. It's not, again, it is simple as that you're not going to play any of your vets down the stretch, but it'll be interesting to see. And you know, Katie Gerald's is still forming a program, even though it's year three and they made the NCAA tournament in year two. And they may take a step back from that standpoint this year. But talk about just her evolution as a coach. And yes, some of the things that she's got, good, solid recruiting class coming in, there's reason for optimism, but got to be a little bit of a challenge for her just because, you know, she had that tremendous success at Marion, but also just, you know, the evolution of a program and building it and trying to get that foundation as solid as possible moving forward.
Yeah, I mean, and she's, you know, she's a competitive person as we saw as a player. She's competitive as a coach. You know, a lot of coaches just, they want to snap their fingers and fix everything. And this can't be fixed with a snap of a finger. And, you know, it's interesting with the transfer portal, and this applies to Purdue, I think, a little bit, but maybe not across the board, is that you when you use the transfer portal, and you know, Purdue did use it under Sharon, and they've used it a little bit under Katie, but you're getting players that you didn't recruit for 3 years in high school. So how much are they bought into what you're doing? And so I think that's a challenge, another challenge for today's coaches, making sure that everybody's engaged and you know, people that you've spent time with are on your side and are going to push forward. And I'm not saying that's happening at Purdue, but I think it's an overall situation with the transfer portal that they haven't been with your program that long. They're either 1 year, 2 years, and you know, in some of the cases with Purdue, they're 3 years. So you hope that they bought into what's going on here. But she has a good group of veterans that have been solid. But you know, they've probably reached their ceiling a little bit. And with, you got your young kids that probably need a few more minutes. And I think that's a challenge for her growing as a coach, to how to balance this out. Getting your young kids the right amount of playing time, but also still keeping your veterans engaged to the point where they're trying to win games for you, and you know, in their careers on a high note. But you know, with this team, you know, if they can figure out a win here in the next week or so, maybe that pushes them forward a little bit more. But you know, they do have a lot of challenges ahead of them, and you know, and she's trying to balance both there. I mean, it's hard because you want that success. You want to take another step forward. You know, they did make the tournament last year, but they made it in the play-in game. So I've used the word incremental in their And you know, this year was set up to take another incremental step forward. Now we'll see if that actually happens, but there will be steps forward even if they don't make the tournament, because you're going to get your freshmen a lot of playing time to kind of set you up here, to combine with some of the recruiting classes that you have coming in and some of the players that they're recruiting.
All right, it's cold in Lafayette, West Lafayette, and you have time to ponder. We talk transfer portal women's basketball, but I want to ask you one question just on the landscape of college sports. And I know you've worked some solutions and have talked to all the people at the NCAA and every place to try to solve some of this, what we're seeing. Transfer portal, like I said, NIL, everything that's going on. Anything from a landscape standpoint? I mean, obviously Purdue football is going to have a – what did we say, 27 new faces on its roster next year, with respect to that, several mid-year enrollees. But anything that's come to mind as you think about what the future of all this is? It's a tough question to end this on, but anything that's jumping out at you from a trend that gives you some feeling that there will be some guardrails or something put up that will return to some level of, I don't know, normalcy, but just some level of being able to navigate an environment for coaches, I guess, and maybe it's the best way to say it.
I don't think there's a solution. Honest, I just think this is going to be a never ending cycle of running around in circles, because you have too many people involved. You have too many entities that want to be involved. You've got to cater to the schools, the NCAA, the athletes, and the list goes on. You got to, you know, Congress is now involved. I just don't think it ever gets to a point where it's doable. I mean, you've got to, you know, and the one thing that gets in the way, especially with the transfer portal and around football, is the one thing that they all should be here for, and that's to go to school. Because the football transfer portal happens so quickly because second semester classes start, and football coaches want those athletes there, enrolled in school, so they can go through spring ball. So you have a very tight window from the end of the football season to when second semester classes to do all this. And you've got, you know, you've blown up teams that are playing in bowl games, and they get beat 63-3, which is not good for anybody.
Yeah.
But it's all centered around, I've got to get these guys in school so I can start coaching them in spring ball. But how do you change that?
Yeah.
I mean, you can't change that. I mean, you cannot change that. So there's a lot of things that need to happen around that to maybe slow the roll, especially in football, the transfer portal being such a nuisance in December and early January. Whether that's, and I know Brian has written about it and other people have written about it, whether that's moving, quote, bowl games to the beginning of the year to make sure everybody wants to play, can play, doesn't opt out, to the thing where in December, the only thing you have is the college football playoff. And most guys are going to stick around to participate in the college football playoff. But once they lose, they're done. They can go in the portal. They can do whatever they want. So, I mean, that's one, I don't know if it's a solution, but it's one idea to maybe slow the roll a little bit. But it's, you know, with NIL, you know, it's pay for play is what it is. And I just don't see how this ends in a positive way for everybody. I mean, I just think a year from now, you're going to ask me the same question.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I'm not going to have an answer. Nobody's going to have an answer. They can't wrap their head around it. Is the solution making them employees? Probably not. Is the solution breaking away and having football as its own independent animal out there? Maybe. But there's just, you just have so many tentacles trying to get involved in these things that it's, you know, it's very hard to come down with a clear solution as far as what needs to happen to calm this thing down and kind of get it back to where it should be where you are academic based, you don't hear anybody talk about going to get a diploma. And now, you know, how does a player get to be in college for 9 years with the guy from Miami? I mean, I know he's injured, but at some point, don't you have to get your life and do something else? But I don't know. I've just rambled. I've wasted a couple of your minutes on your precious time. But there's not a solution. If there was a solution, it's like asking a coach, like me asking Katie Gerald, so how do you fix the turnover problem? Well, if I knew that answer, I'd already fixed it. Same situation here. How do you fix this when there's absolutely no solution out there to get it fixed?
Yeah, I think you're right. It is and we're so used to dealing with problems that there's at least one of three answers you might be able to come up with. I don't even know where that is here. Last quickly on, is it a football? Do you still look at the big picture? This seems to be, maybe because Purdue men's basketball, I'm going to use them as an example, seems to have a lot of stability, and that could change in 2 years, you know, from a transfer portal. Who the heck knows? But is this really a football problem that you've got to fix, or you've got to figure out, or something? Or are we going to live in this continual merry-go-round? But is it a football problem 95% of it in your view?
Oh, yeah, it is a football problem because of the way the schedule and the calendars are set up. Yeah. Basketball has, you know, there's transfer portal issues with basketball and other sports, but football is the main one because the value that's put on spring practice, the value of getting guys into your program as early as possible.
Yeah.
And that bumps up against, you know, you got two worlds colliding there. You have the end of the season with playoffs and bowl games going up against the transfer portal opening and then going up against second semester classes starting. I mean, can you get every Power Five university to start second semester class at the same time? No, you can't. I mean, you can't control that. So it is a football problem. It's a football issue that needs to get taken care of, but it has to get taken care of around the academic component of it, because schools are not going to change what they do in that area just to satisfy fixing the transfer portal. So you've got to work around that first and then figure out a way, what's the best solution to get everybody to that point. And I think the less games you have in December allows that maybe to progress a little bit better, because you're running up against all these bowl games. But the other component of that is TV. ESPN or whoever, they want their bowl games in December because they got to have content on their air, and that's what people watch. So it's a tough balance because you need the money, but you also got to give the players their freedom to do what they want. I do believe there should be tighter rules on transfers, but anytime you try to get that through, you end up in court, because everybody feels like they have a right to move freely. In the real world, I can do that because I'm a freelancer. Yeah. But other people have contracts and non-compete clauses that they have to abide by. So there's a whole host of issues that have to get ironed out, and I just don't see that happening anytime soon. It may not happen in my lifetime.
I think you are on to something. And yes, it is, what's to say you can't challenge the ability to stay in school? Like I said, 9 years, I got one. You know, what's to say that I want to go and get my doctorate, but I want to play college football, you know?
Yeah, what programs are you taking in your ninth year academically?
I'm not sure. I had a hard time getting them in 4 or 5. So that's the thing.
That's a hard, I'd still be in school.
Yeah, you bet. So, Mike, thanks for your insight as always, and always interesting, even if we are spinning our wheels in football or portal conversation. It is a topic that is being hit all the time. So we will take a, I don't know, we're not really going to take a show. We're going to take a transition to Tom Dienhart, and we'll talk some Purdue football recruiting, and we'll look forward to doing that. So, Mike, thanks again. Have a great rest of your weekend, and we'll stay tuned. We'll be with Tom here in a second. Tom Dienhart joins us first. I guess they call it the second segment of Saturday simulcast. And Tom, nobody covers Purdue football better than Tom Dienhart, and we're grateful for all his work. This and Tom's been living in the environment of head on a swivel over such a long period of time. It is an interesting time, obviously, in Purdue football recruiting, and Ryan Walters is working hard to make an impact and build a foundation. I know for the Penn State men's basketball game, Zach Edey was on the floor, but so was Tom Dienhart, was scouting out some of those junior day guys that came in. But just talk about kind of where, you know, I know that this weekend, it's a big weekend. Coaches are making an impact in Indianapolis on down. You've written about that. But just kind of give me a broad stroke view of what you're seeing from Ryan Walters' staff, really in his first kind of full swing at the high school recruiting landscape.
Yeah, you know, that was supposed to be a strength of Walters and his staff, and I think it has been so far, Alan.
Yeah,
the ability to connect with these kids. I mean, we it's well documented how young the Purdue staff is, led by Ryan Walters, who, Alan, I believe, has a birthday on Sunday.
That's right. Behold, 38. Remember when you were 38?
I can't even remember 38, Alan. I still own a comb when I was 38.
Yeah.
But yeah, you know, they got a late start last year. Obviously, he came in December, got his staff together. They sort of had to keep the class together. Brahman had assembled and added a few guys. Well, this is more of an indication, 2024 class and beyond, maybe, of the recruiting acumen of Walters and company. And you know, the class this year that they signed, at least December 20th, the first wave of guys, I think was pretty well received. Well ranked, I want to say, in the 30s in the nation by On3. A nice collection, I think, of offensive linemen and defensive backs in particular, Alan. And they're turning the page, obviously, now. All eyes are on 2025 kids. Juniors right now will be seniors next fall. And they've got four commitments already, Alan. They got a big one recently from Terrion Grant, the big 6'4" cornerback, Alan, from Murfreesboro, Tennessee, a four-star kid, had a who's who list of offers. And he'd been a silent verbal for a couple months, Alan, went public, I believe it was on Sunday. So big get, again, four guys. They've got a quarterback for next year too already, Alan, Sawyer Anderson, a 5'10" kid from Texas. And they got a running back also and a linebacker. So they got four in the can, so to speak, Alan, and they hosted the four or five kids this last Saturday you were talking about over in Mackey Arena, some 2025 guys. And Alan, there's a name on there you may be familiar with, Cameron Gorin, the son of Brandon Gorin, big 6'5" offensive tackle from Hamilton Southeastern. He was there. John Anthony Hall, a wide receiver from Fishers, Alan, he got an offer last week when he was here. Nizzy Davis, a big 6'6" tight end from Lawrence Central. So again, and all Indianapolis kids, right? And Friday, the staff is sort of blitzing Indianapolis, if you will. I like calling it Naptown. My dad always called it blitzing Naptown, and they did something last year. Of course, if you're a Purdue football coach, Purdue anything, you want to have a good presence in the capital city. And they've got an itinerary. If schools are hitting, they're going to go to a basketball game tonight. And yeah, you know, they're at it, trying to connect with these kids. And no visits this weekend, Alan. There's no basketball home game. But again, they've been busy on the road all across the nation during the course of this last week. The Blitz in Indianapolis on Friday. And I think, what, next Saturday they play Michigan at home? Basketball team does, I want to say. Is that right?
No, they play a Tuesday, though. They don't have a home men's basketball game till IU on February 10th, a weekend home game. They have Michigan on Tuesday, which I'm sure they could have some relatively local kids up for that. And then, of course, they go to Rutgers. Then they go to Wisconsin the following weekend. Then, of course, Indiana. Yeah, it's weird because they really only have three weekend games left with they've got obviously Indiana on the 10th, and they've got Michigan State on the 2nd, and then Wisconsin on Senior Day on the 10th.
Interesting.
Really makes it a little bit of a challenge, because that's why that Penn State, you know, you got to showcase that number one team when you're, or top two team, I should say, right now, that makes a big difference. Interesting part. What do you see about, you know, guy, again, coaches, you've been around coaches a long time and understand building. We were talking with Mike in segment one about Katie Gerald's and trying to build a foundation. And, you know, and having an identity. Is it harder, or is it almost impossible to have that in the transfer portal world? But yet what you're seeing is that Indiana connection, trying to get that foothold. What do you see as the strategy of Ryan Walters and company? To is it scattershot, or is it really we want to get this base handled here in that 250 mile radius? What do you see from that standpoint?
Yeah, I think you always want to, for generations, Alan, you always want to win your home state, right? You want to keep your best players at home if you can, and then sort of fan out from there. But you know, I think it always means a little bit more to guys who are from the state. You know, they understand the state. They understand Purdue, the Purdue-IU rivalry. Their families are nearby. So I think those guys have maybe a little bit more invested. But again, you just want good players, right? I don't care where they're from. All you want are good players. And this staff obviously has made its presence felt far and wide on the high school recruiting front. You know, going to Mississippi, you know, Tennessee, to Texas, on and on it goes. They've really fanned the country, looking for talent. But again, I don't know. You know, players come and go more than ever in this era with the transfer portal, Alan. So the task has got to be tougher for coaches who have guys who are, I don't want to call them mercenaries, but these transfers come in, Alan, and I'm sure you're supposed to be team first. I'm sure these guys are team first, but they came here because they want to play, man. I'm sure they want to win, but they want to play. They saw an opportunity to come to Purdue to play and get on the field. That's what everybody wants. That's what Alan Karpik wanted to do back in 1977. With Bill. He just wanted to get off the bench and play.
Or you and I didn't. And I didn't, by the way. I didn't get off at all. But
you could have transferred to Frontier or Benton Central. Everybody wants to play. So it's tough, man. You know, you got to manage egos. You got to manage people's wants. And you got to look for selfishness. It's tough. I mean, it's tough, but I guess you try to develop some type of baseline culture. I think a lot of that, Alan, starts with your strength coach, honestly. The one coach who probably spends more time with players than any other guy on the staff is Kiro Small.
Yeah.
And boy, I've talked to Kiro a few times, know him just a little bit, and other people talk about him in very high praise, very high words for Kiro. What he's meant, just not from a physical development standpoint, but from, I think, a culture standpoint and work ethic standpoint. So he, more than anybody, may be responsible for maybe establishing a baseline culture in the Purdue football program.
You know, we've talked about it, and we talked about it with Mike earlier also, but just this whole navigating the world of change and being able to be in that environment and to be able to weather the storm. And again, we're not in Ryan Walters having breakfast with him every morning, so we don't know really what he feels. But boy, it does seem like if there's any chance to be able to have a guy that can deal with the thousand things that are thrown at him and not really let it faze him all that much, is it safe to say at least that Ryan Walters takes a step in the right direction there? Because maybe because that 38-year-old body, I don't know, but it seems to me he's kind of hanging in there and just doing his thing, controlling what he can control.
Yeah, amen to that, brother. And then I think as you were talking, I think you gave the answer I was thinking of, the youth of Walters. You know, he's a younger guy, more adaptable to change, not set in his ways. We saw Nick Saban leave. They said some of that was due to the changing landscape of college football, he didn't grow up navigating. And I understand it. You know, I get it. But again, I think maybe that's one of the strengths of having a younger coach who's not fazed, he's not put off by this new era. These gosh darn kids who want money, you know? Yeah. It doesn't do any good. Doesn't do any good to shake your fist at the clouds, Alan. These are the rules. This is how the game's played. Either embrace it or fail, right? And it's like that in life across every stage. You got to embrace what it is, and if not, you're going to get left behind. And I think Ryan Walters fully embraces the landscape of college football. I think that was maybe part of the reason why he was hired too, Alan, for a lot of reasons. But I think some of it was that youth, the wide-eyed ability to not be daunted by any task. Purdue's a tough job. This is a tough landscape. We all know it. Walters just shrugs his shoulders and keeps moving forward. And we've seen him stump for a more robust collective. He knows what it takes to win. And I think it's going to be fun to see where this thing is at in 2 or 3 years, Alan. This coming fall is going to be interesting, right? 18-team Big Ten, tough schedule. Notre Dame's back, coming off a 4-8 season. You know, 14 transfers. How's all this going to look? There's the storylines tumble out of my head when I think about it. Big year, Alan. A big year. Can't Purdue get back to the bowl business? It's going to be a lot of fun tracking this team starting spring football here in what, about probably about 2 months from now, Alan. If you believe it, 2 months from now. Shine your helmet. Get your mouthpiece ready, Alan. About 2 months from now, they're going to be cracking skulls over there on Northwestern Avenue.
Yeah, I think, you know, we as older guys can come up with all these reasons why Purdue can't compete. Yeah. You know, if the four teams that are coming into the league are all higher up in the food chain than Purdue has been historically, with maybe the exception of UCLA. But I think you're exactly right. If there's any chance to do, you can't control that. You want to put fans in the stands. That's going to be an interesting thing. You got a schedule this year with Notre Dame and Oregon and Penn State, right? Coming to Ross Aid as Penn State comes as well. You know, it's going to be attractive. It's a fun thing to do. Maybe we shouldn't worry about it all that much. Just let it flow. Let them handle it, because I sit there and think, oh man, this isn't going to work all long term. But, who's to say? Who's to say? And I think Ryan Walters, it does seem that the way he at least approaches it is a good way to, is a path to some level of success. And
one thing to think about, I read a lot of stuff and listen to podcasts and from other college football writers, and the second year for a transfer quarterback, the leap that they make, which you'd think would be natural for anything, right? But boy, that year one to year two in the program for your transfer quarterback, if you look at some of the guys who have done this the last 2 or 3 years, that second year, boy, that's really a big jump up. So here we are, year two for Hudson Card. Familiarity, more comfort, Alan. He'd never really been a long-term starter before either. I think people forgot that about Hudson Card. He looked good. He was solid this year, but he only started, I think, 5 games in 3 years at Texas. And so I think maybe everybody's hoping maybe Hudson Card takes a big leap in his development and evolution in 2024 as well.
Yeah, we saw a very good Hudson Card when he was healthy, which was an issue this past year, and it's always going to be an issue for quarterbacks. We know that. You just watch the NFL. You watch every level. That it's always a challenge to keep that position healthy. But yeah, I like that. I'm with you on that. I think Hudson Card is a guy that you can build around. He's the right, you know, far more than I, the right personality. Maybe from a leadership standpoint, that if there's any way to congeal this and have a normal, a relatively normal, stable situation, he gives you that opportunity, because by the time he's done, he's going to be 24 years old too, right? By, you know, or at that 23, 24 age.
Plays another year, yeah.
You know, yeah, and that's a big thing from a maturity standpoint.
And again, I think the offensive line is going to be much better this year, Alan.
Yeah.
They've got four portal guys now. They got two junior college transfers. Those are six grown men, six grown offensive linemen who are just add water, ready to go, that are on campus now. They're going to go through spring football. You mix those six guys with a pretty solid core of veterans coming back up front, Alan, with Musa and Bo, Hartwig, Jalen Grant, Luke Griffin. Long story short, depth's going to be much better this year, and that line should be much better equipped, you would think, to protect Hudson Card, and maybe Allen get a little better push in those third and one and fourth and one situations we always see Purdue struggle in, especially in the red zone.
All right. We'll leave that with an optimistic tone to this, which we try to be anyway, but that's part of the storyline. All right. For all of you out there, stay warm. Don't shovel too much snow, or get your snowblower out if you can. That's my advice. But also, we appreciate Tom's work and Mike Carmen's expertise. Stay tuned. We'll have more next week as well. There's always going to be a storyline when it comes to Purdue football recruiting and off-season stuff with this wonderful thing, the portal and NIL, always subject lines as well. So thanks to the Union Club Hotel, the 811 Bistro, Boiler Up Bar. We appreciate them and all that they do. This don't forget that you can vote for the Purdue Union Club Hotel and the Marriott Bonvoy. It's one of the best hotels in the in its program around the United States, and it is that with Vicky Wicks and that company that do a great job there. So have a great rest of your weekend, all. Thanks so much for joining us. And a reminder too that you can subscribe to the thing called goldenblack.com. We have a lot of offers out there, special offers if you want to become a member. You can mix it up with the knuckleheads. Tom Dienhart will answer your questions from time to time.
I got a chat today, Alan. Chat
Got
today.
got his Friday chat, which is great stuff. Brian Newbert will he juggles it as well as anybody as well. We would love to have you as a subscriber. If you watch us on YouTube or listen to us on your favorite podcast channel, think about becoming a member because it really is worth your time. I'm a little biased, but I think it really is. So again, have a great rest of your weekend. Thanks for watching and listening. We'll be back next week with our Saturday simulcast.